This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There is a lot of news, and it's happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So the real estate website Zillow, they've got a new study out that claims teachers cannot afford to pay the average rent in the city of Seattle. And it's not true. I mean, it might be true under the circumstances that they present, but I think it's a little unfair and a little disingenuous the way that they're putting it out there. Now, of course, they're putting it out there because they want to be seen as being pro-teacher. That gives them some goodwill out in the community, and I get that. It's part of their brand. But when you actually look at the data, they're not making the point that they think they're making, and I think that they would concede that they're not really saying what some people say they claim. So they say the average rent of a Seattle apartment or a home in this area, in Seattle, $2,259. That's the average rent. And based on that, they say the average teacher would have to spend about 75% of their starting salary to pay for that. And so you look at that and you're like, wow, that's not good. That's a lot. Teachers are heroes. They do tremendous work for their community. They take care of our kids almost more than we actually do. They should not have to spend 75% of their starting teacher salary just to afford to live in a Seattle apartment. Oh, I am outraged. Let's pay them more. In fact, that's basically what Phyllis Campano is saying. She was just on the show. She's the president of the Seattle Education Association, the union. And she told Cairo 7 TV that this is the reality they're dealing with. It's just too expensive.
We have a stable teaching force that is student supports. So that comes through compensation. Uh-huh. It's hard to live in Seattle right now.
Okay, maybe it's quote unquote hard to live in Seattle right now, but let's not use the Zillow data to make that point. Because that average rent that they say is $2,259, that takes into account all homes, all apartments, regardless of whether or not we're talking about a studio or a one-bedroom or a two-bedroom or those rare three-bedroom homes, right? If you're a teacher who is single, is it fair to compare your salary to people who are renting out homes with two or three bedrooms or even one bedroom? Is that fair? If you are a young teacher, say you're just out of college, you're getting your first job as a teacher, you're in your early 20s, you're making whatever the average salary is for a starting teacher in Seattle. I believe it's a little under 60 or at 60. Are we really going to pretend that that person's in the market for a two-bedroom apartment? No, of course not. But this is the same kind of study that goes out there that's used by others, not by Zillow, by others to make the point that, oh, man, we've got a housing affordability crisis. The average rent is blah, blah, blah. And then you realize they're looking at two-bedroom apartments and they're only taking into account one person living there. This is basically the same thing. That young teacher is not in the market for a two-bedroom. Maybe they're in the market for a one-bedroom or a studio. And when you look at the numbers, it's not going to be 75% of their pay going into the rent. Now take, for example, let's look at the two-bedroom. Let's say you've got a two-bedroom. Who's more likely than not to get a two-bedroom apartment? Someone who's not alone, single like me. It's someone who's got a spouse. It's someone who's got a partner. It's someone who's got roommates. They're going to be the ones spending the money on the rent for that two-bedroom. And thus, it's not just one person's salary going into the average. It's now split between two. Now, we assume that it's down the middle, but sometimes someone will take the bigger, the master bedroom, and they pay a little bit more. This is not an honest way to look at this particular issue. You can still make the point that it's expensive to live in Seattle, that teachers deserve more money. Okay, go ahead and make that point, but don't use this data. Now, they say a housing shortage is the root cause of the affordability gap, according to Skylar Olson. He's Zillow's director of economic research. And he's absolutely true on that. That's 100% true. The reason why we've got a housing, quote unquote, affordability crisis, although that's questionable, that use of that term, at least. The reason why we've got rents as high as they are is because we have a council that has said, okay, you're not going to build too many homes. You're not going to build over eight stories high, despite the fact that we had a huge, huge demand. And so they decided to cap the amount of apartments, essentially. And then to build an apartment here, to build anything here, is incredibly expensive because of all the taxes, all the fees that go along with it. So the developers end up having to eat that cost, but then they pass it along to the consumer. But don't pretend that this data is an accurate reflection of a single teacher. spending 75% of their salary on rent. That is absolutely absurd. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So Dave Chappelle's got a brand new Netflix special out. I think it's called Sticks and Stones. I actually watched it last night. It's hysterical. It is brilliant. I love it. And maybe part of the reason why I love it is I knew that what would come along with this Netflix special is a whole bunch of woke, hyper-partisan, hippie, progressive, hipster lunatics getting upset. Because, oh my gosh, they got triggered by this thing. Taylor Hosking over at Vice.
I don't think I'm...
Over at the Vice website. She goes, who would have thought that the transphobic jokes would be the hill that such a smart, talented comedian needs to die on? The comedian doubles down on misogyny and transphobia in both the special and the hidden bonus scenes that follows. Now, of course, that comment is ridiculous. She's not going to dictate who is in fact going to end their comic career because she seemed to get triggered by some jokes in it. But it's ironic because in this very special, it's literally a part of the show to highlight how crazy people like Taylor and like other blue check marks on Twitter who are part of this hyper-partisan woke brigade, it's about how they are lunatics. In fact, I'll play for you a clip to set it up because like all of Dave Chappelle's work, it takes a while to set up a joke. It's more of a story and then a point. He's talking about Kevin Hart, the other comedian, who happens to be a really good friend of Dave Chappelle, and how he lost his hosting gig over at the Oscars because someone found on his Twitter feed 10 years before a quote-unquote homophobic joke that is homophobic by 2019 standards, arguably, but not really, but certainly not as it was in 2008, 2009 when it was there. So here he is talking about that in that context.
What Kevin had to learn the hard way is we were breaking an unwritten and unspoken rule of show business. And if I say it, you'll know that I'm telling you the truth. The rule is that no matter what you do in your artistic expression, you are never, ever allowed to upset the alphabet people.
Uh-oh.
You know who I mean. Those people that took 20% of the alphabet for themselves. I'd say the letters, but I don't want to conjure their anger. It's too late now. I'm talking about them L's and them B's and them G's and the T's. People be surprised. I have friends all kinds of letters. Everybody loves me and I love everybody. I got friends who are L's, I got friends who are B's, and I got friends who are G's. But the T's hate my guts. And I don't blame them. It's not their fault, it's mine. I can't stop telling jokes about these d-s. I don't want to write these jokes, but I just can't stop.
So I hope this becomes into something bigger than it is because he's not just giving up and people are actually defending him in the comedian universe. We are at this crossroads, I think, when it comes to pop culture, when it comes to stand-up comedy, when it comes to comedy in general, where you've got some people who believe they have the right to never, ever, ever be offended. They never want to be offended. They never want you talking or making light of anything that might potentially offend them. And then you've got the other folks who are like, this is stand-up comedy. We're literally supposed to talk about everything we're quote-unquote not supposed to talk about. We're supposed to make light of this stuff. We're supposed to push boundaries. That's what great comedy has always been. And so right now you've got two sides fighting against each other. The side that is on the side of art and creativity and humor. And then on the side of people who go, okay, you can be funny, but you got to follow these rules. One side is incredibly dangerous to go down that pathway. That's incredibly dangerous. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. We talk about that quote on the show all the time. Right now, you've got a whole bunch of woke people who are pretending to be the social justice police who want to get offended on behalf of groups that aren't even necessarily offended. The best comedy out there will challenge you. It doesn't just make you laugh. That's also, obviously, an important part of comedy. But it's also getting you to laugh when you're not supposed to. When it makes you uncomfortable as you're actually laughing. And there are just a handful of comedians who are really good at that. Dave Chappelle happens to be one of them. If anything, you're supposed to realize that joking about this stuff, getting triggered, is not that big of a deal. It doesn't end your life as we know it. It does not crumble. The LGBTQ community is no weaker now than they were yesterday because of Dave Chappelle having a comedy special. In fact, in the special, he goes into a joke interacting with someone who is transgender, who is all like completely laughing at the trans jokes. He felt bad about it, but she was laughing, and it makes the point we're all going to be okay. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. We still got some videos up from yesterday when I was on the Tucker Carlson Show. We took behind the scenes of all of that. Go to your Instagram app, search for the screen name Jason Rants. It's all one word. Give me a follow. Would really appreciate it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? What a dumb tweet.
Yeah, it kind of really is, but it became something a lot bigger than it needed to be. So Brett Stevens is essentially the token conservative over at the New York Times, and he decided to get rid of his Twitter feed after a trend was started yesterday comparing him to a bedbug. Not just saying Brett Stevens is a bedbug. And it all got started by an associate professor over at George Washington University by the name of David Karpf. So he retweets a story about bedbugs being found in the New York Times newsroom, and the specific tweet was, "The bedbugs are a metaphor. The bedbugs are Brett Stevens." He doesn't like Brett Stevens, presumably because of his conservative views that he puts in his column all the time. So Brett sees this tweet, figures out who was responsible for it going viral, and then he emails a complaint not just to the professor, but to the provost of the university. The intent to a lot of us was, oh, you're trying to get this dude in trouble. So he goes on MSNBC this morning to explain exactly how it all went down.
I'm going to be careful with my words because I know these are going to be examined carefully. So I think Twitter brings out the worst in its users. It tends to bring out the worst in its users. And yesterday, a professor at George Washington University described me as a bedbug or a metaphorical bedbug, just in the context of the New York Times having a bedbug problem in our building. And I think that kind of rhetoric is dehumanizing and totally unacceptable, no matter where it comes from.
I mean, that's going 0 to 60 really quickly in the outrage machine, yeah? I mean, it's certainly not nice, and I can imagine that a whole bunch of people on Twitter calling you a bedbug doesn't make you feel all that good. But let's not pretend that this is the most dehumanizing speech in the history of dehumanizing speech. But okay, continue.
So I wrote him a personal email. I didn't go to Twitter. I wrote him a personal email, which I think was very civil.
He's a hero. Can we just give him a round of applause just real quickly? I mean, that's... No? Okay, fine.
Saying that I did appreciate it, that I would welcome him to come to my home in New York, meet with my family, and see if he would call me a bedbug to my face. Because a lot of the things people say on social media aren't the things they're really prepared to say in one-on-one interactions.
Just real quick, is he new to Twitter? He's not new. He's been on Twitter for a very long time. None of this is new.
I think he just threatened the guy to a fight.
No, he said, come to my home, and then introduced me to his wife. That was just kind of weird.
He didn't say that last part.
I also copied his provost on the note. People are upset about this. I want to be clear. I had no intention whatsoever to get him in any kind of professional trouble. But it is the case at the New York Times and other institutions that people should be aware, managers should be aware of the way in which their people, their professors or journalists, interact with the rest of the world.
The funny thing is, I 100% agree with him on that point. I don't think what he just said there is unreasonable. You do have a lot of professors who are being protected under, you know, the idea of academic security. You get to talk about what it is. You get to teach what it is you want to teach. We're not going to get in the way. I totally get that. But a lot of people abuse this and go and push out this hateful rhetoric. Now, I don't think this is hateful. I think it's mostly funny. Yes, it's mean-spirited, but I don't think there was like the intent to dehumanize. I think it was just making a very bad joke. But it's true that a lot of professors do this kind of stuff with regularity, and we're kind of okay with it. And I don't know how often some schools know the conduct of the people who are in their class. I mean, it's similar in a way to what we were talking about in the UW-Tacoma issue. You've got a part-time lecturer who's nasty to people, who's proactively nasty to people. Are you guys aware of that? The same question should go here. Are you guys aware of what this guy is doing? Where he loses me is that he wants to pretend that this is more serious than it actually is.
There's a bad history of being called, of being analogized to insects that goes back to a lot of totalitarian regimes in the past. I've been called worse. I wrote this guy a personal note. Now it's out there for everyone to see.
Okay. You're not that much of a victim. Let's not compare this to like Jews being called roaches. Okay. Let's all relax. That's not what this is about. You got your feelings hurt. I totally sympathize with that as someone who was on Twitter after I was on Tucker Carlson and saw a lot of people making fun of my eyebrows. Thank you very much, by the way. That really made me feel good. So I totally get where he's coming from. But I'm not going to go to this point that, oh, it's just like the Jews being persecuted, which is essentially what he's saying there. Let's all relax a little bit.
Didn't someone say you lost credibility because of your eyebrows?
Yeah, did you see that email?
I saw that
one. We'll read it later on in the
show.
That's funny. But right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Your health.
So Evergreen Health didn't get enough voters in Kirkland to approve their bond. It was going to be $345 million spent over 20 years. And they put a lot of money into trying to get voters to support this. In fact, they spent several hundreds of thousands of dollars to get out the vote. The opponents, according to the Seattle Times, spent $34. Not $340,000, but $34. Now, this new bond, if it was passed, would have extended the current tax rate of 29 cents per $1,000 of assessed value, again, over the course of the next 20 years. Now, they're supposed to get 60% on these types of bond measures, or it doesn't pass. They got 58.5. Now, this is the second time that they lost. Now, normally, I would say, okay, you're talking about a tight margin there, 58.5%. That's about voter turnout for the most part, right? You just got to get a couple hundred more, maybe 300 more voters out to vote, and you're fine. This was a low election cycle. You've got a non-presidential year. You've got a lot going against you to get to that 60%. However, in the Seattle Times, they went over the reasons why people decided they weren't going to support this. And I think because the margin was so short to get to that 60%, it's worth at least listening to, because my fear is whenever there's a bond measure that doesn't get passed, and this is usually the case when we're talking about school bonds, they just do it again in the next cycle and they change absolutely nothing, as if it was just a fluke that they didn't get it the last time. This is the second time that this didn't pass. Now, the voters who said no cited a bunch of reasons. This, according to the Seattle Times, frustration with taxes rising with property values, questions about the need for a public hospital district, and a backlash to a controversial mailer that showed voting histories of the individual voters and their neighbors. We talked about that. It was that voting report card where they said how your neighbors voted, or if you voted, not how they voted, and they called out people who didn't vote. That seemed to spectacularly backfire. But that first part is kind of important. Frustration with taxes rising with property values. People are getting taxed to death. And depending on where it is you live, you're going to get a different kind of tax fatigue. Snohomish County, parts of King County, parts of Pierce County, they're getting fatigue. Seattle's not getting tax fatigue. Seattle seems to say, oh, just please give me more taxes. Please, I beg of you, give me more taxes. What, you're not going to give me taxes? I am outraged. Give me more. But there are other folks who are sick and tired of it, because they realize it's getting more and more and more expensive. And yes, you can make the pitch, oh, it's just 29 cents per $1,000 of assessed value. That's just chump change. Well, maybe to some homeowners it is, but understand that this is not the only property tax that they're facing. They've got all of these other taxes that they're constantly dealing with. And as a result, they're saying, you know what? I don't want anything more. This should be a wake-up call, even if it was at 58.5%, but it should be a wake-up call to suggest there are too many people who are too quickly going down this pathway of more and more property taxes without addressing all the other ones that they're already spending the money on. And until you address where all the other money is going, or at least understand that things are tough for some folks who don't want to keep getting nickel and dimed every single month thanks to a new tax, you're going to get these close votes where you almost win, but you're not actually going to get the W. You're going to get another big loss. Or what do they say? What's the opposite of the W? The L?
The L. You take the L.
That didn't flow the same way as the W. No. I like the it was
well,
better.
You know, take an L. Is a pretty common slang term.
It didn't feel natural.
You're a loser.
It didn't. Well, no, that's not. It's you lost.
Right. So the example would be in this last segment, you took an L.
I took the W because I gave good analysis.
Right, but then you didn't know what take an L means. So then you took an L.
Fine. 1-800-465-8770. You are listening to The Jason Rant Show.
From the Online Trading Academy studio, this is AM 770 KTTH.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rant Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. It means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local, very simple to understand. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, and they end up ignoring all of the communities you live in and care about the most. And so for the Big Local, we decide to ignore Seattle and focus exclusively on you and where you live in. And I acknowledge that this first story, which comes out of Thurston County, I acknowledge on the surface, on paper, it's incredibly, incredibly boring. But it is probably one of the most important stories that you're going to hear because of one simple fact. Here's the context. There are so many stories out there that we find that other talk show hosts and reporters and journalists find because of public disclosure requests. And there are a lot of government agencies out there in the state of Washington, really all across the country, that drag their feet, they over-redact, all because they want to keep secret information that we 100% have the right to see. And right now, there's a fight in Thurston County over this. A Superior Court Judge Christopher Lannies, he found that the county was in violation of the code for improperly withholding or redacting public records from someone who requested them. So they were fined as a result $311,000 and change. Now, the prosecutor's office today announced that they are going to actually push back. The county, excuse me, decided that they're going to appeal this. That they're not going to want to pay this. They think they did everything exactly the way they were supposed to. But according to the prosecutor, they said that they actually withheld and redacted hundreds of pages of public records and then prolonged its response to the renewed request, repeating improper redactions and withholdings. This all according to the lawsuit. So the county is appealing. I want them to fail miserably, even though it means tax dollars are going into this fight. Tax dollars essentially being wasted. I want to continue this fight because of how important it is. You are their bosses. Every single person who lives in the state of Washington, you are the bosses of the people who work for the government. We pay their salary. We pay for their offices. We pay for their assistance. We pay for everything that they touch. We own what they touch. We own that product. We own those emails. We own those records. We own those email accounts. Anything and everything that they do, with few exceptions, it belongs to us. And we need to be able to gain access to that, because when they're able to hide what it is they do, the decisions they make, the policies they propose, the way they go about passing policies, if they get to hide that, there's going to be so much more corruption than they already have been, that they've already been engaged in. How many times have we broken stories on this show thanks to public disclosure requests? Sometimes we do it very intentionally. Sometimes we find out information completely by accident because of PDRs. Incredibly boring, but incredibly important. So I'm hoping that you're going to help me put a spotlight on this issue. I'm hoping that the next time you encounter someone who works for a state government agency, or in a lot of cases, we're just talking about state representatives, state senators, who don't believe that their individual emails and their calendars should be subject to public disclosure requests, you need to put this on them. You need to get them to support more open government, not less. Meanwhile, we have a weird kidnapping story out of Spokane where a woman's alleged to have kidnapped a car dealer during a test drive. KXLY TV reports, 32-year-old Cassandra Ayala was arrested on charges of kidnapping, taking a car without permission, and assault for a car chase. This all happened over the weekend. This is what they say. They say an employee at Dave Smith Nissan called police at 2 p.m. on Saturday, saying he was on a test drive with a couple, and the driver refused to return the car or let him out of the vehicle. The employee stayed on the cell phone and continued to update the police on the location of the car. I've not actually ever stolen a car, but this seems like the wrong way to kidnap people and steal cars.
Shouldn't you take the phone away from the passenger you're kidnapping?
I mean, that's certainly something that I would do.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not because I've done it, but because I've seen, you know, movies and TV shows with these types of car chases and kidnaps.
And that's how we've always done it. That's what we've typically done. When we take the phone away,
I mean, eventually you got caught, but still, I mean, for all the ones that were successful, you didn't let them keep their phone.
We had a good string. We were going there for a while.
Now, maybe someone's out there saying, oh, the woman who was driving didn't realize he was on the phone. No, she was aware that he was on the phone the entire time, according to the story. They say officers quickly located the car, tried to pull it over. Police said Ayala would not stop, but continued at a slow speed. In the meantime, officers kept getting updates from the victim, who was still inside and unable to get out. The victim told police Ayala was saying she would not pull over, and he thought she was going to harm him. The police dispatcher could hear Ayala in the back room and said she was talking about knowing the police were on the phone. I don't understand that part. Like, you know the dude's on the phone, presumably, because they ended up getting into a high-speed chase. Presumably, you wanted to get away from the cops. Shouldn't you have at least taken the phone?
Well, at least she's, you know, being hospitable to her backseat passenger. I think that's what she was really going for. She wanted,
I mean, hospitable would have been allowed to get him out of the car.
No. They'll be just letting him leave.
Police said Ayala started to speed up in the area of 14th and Ladawa, which is a dead end. Officers attempted to block the car, but said Ayala then drove through and struck three patrol cars. Officers said the situation became dangerous for the victim in the car and the public, so a sergeant used his vehicle to strike the car and ended the incident. So she's been arrested, and now we'll deal with this. Dumbest car thief / kidnapper ever.
Look.
And by the way, are we surprised or not that it comes from Spokane? Because I usually take a position that Bellingham has all the crazy criminals. This is probably in the top tier of stupid people.
Look. Car negotiations are tough. Everyone from the dealership
to the buyer. To cut a few grand off of the...
Everyone's trying to cut costs and, you know, go penny by penny. It's tough. It's stressful. Who's really at fault here?
That's victim blaming.
These are tough. It's a tough situation.
I will let you out of this car, but you have to throw in floor mats.
Yeah, knock off.
I'll let you out, but you're going to give me a deal. Give me a first aid kit for the back. We're good.
Where's the owner's manual? The owner's manual isn't here.
Finally, in the least shocking news ever, a repeat offender from Linwood is back in jail. How weird is that? Daniel Garnisa Melgoza had allegedly strangled his girlfriend, attacked another man as she tried to get away, led cops on a 42-mile high-speed chase that went from Linwood all the way to Woodinville and everywhere in between. He ends up getting shot by sheriff's deputies. This all happened last October. He gets out of jail. Obviously, he survived. He gets out of jail, and according to the Herald, he allegedly repeatedly violated the no-contact order with the, as the Herald puts it, the on-again, off-again girlfriend. She said the man slapped, punched, and strangled her for about 30 seconds. This all according to court documents. And he wasn't supposed to come within 300 feet of her. He did so anyway. And now as a result, he's back in jail. Is this shocking to anybody? Do we realize that when you're dealing with certain kinds of people, although in this case, alleged, I'm going to assume that he's guilty, but we have to say alleged. Crazy people don't really respond to no contact orders. Just throwing that out there. I get that we're supposed to do it for the sake of doing it, and maybe it's just an excuse to then be able to put the person back in jail. They don't always abide by the rules because they're criminals. You know what criminals don't do? Abide by the rules.
Abide by the rules.
Exactly.
insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
I know. And you know what else? You know what bad guys don't do? Say abide by the rules.
Abide by the rules. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different
results. Totally agree. But what do bad guys never do? Say abide by the rules.
Abide by the rules. And insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, if there is a moment of the show that you want to relive, because it was just radio gold, like our insanity bit, or if you miss portions of the show, including some of the interviews that we air that you hear us citing, you can subscribe to the podcast and listen wherever it is you want to listen to the show. All you have to do is text the keyword podcast. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Just search for The Jason Rand Show wherever it is you download your podcast. Pete Davidson is a cast member on SNL. He's a stand-up comic who's not particularly funny, although likable. I like Pete Davidson. I just don't think he's especially funny. He decided to do stand-up on a college campus. If you're a comedian, you should not do stand-up on a campus. Just ever. Never do stand-up there. Because you're going to be surrounded by people who, one, probably are dealing with some form of tech ADHD, as was the case with Pete Davidson, or number two, they're going to get upset when you start yelling at them, including using language that's politically incorrect, which also happened to Pete Davidson, because he's in trouble for using the R word when talking about someone in a derisive way, when referring to their mental instability, we'll say in this case, because that's the way that he used it. So when you go on a college campus, you need to be super woke. There are a lot of comedians, big names. No matter how much they're getting paid, they will not step foot on a college campus because it's just not worth it. So he ends up going to the University of Central Florida. And as he was doing his stand-up, there were a lot of folks in the audience using their cell phones. He got very upset. He ends up using the R word, which is in that no-go zone for comedy, and it's not a good look.
Film everything, like not enjoy the show for an hour, then like, I don't gotta be here. I can just give them their money back, because I don't give a. So like, whenever somebody else comes to your town and wants to perform and is exhausted and flies all the way to the middle of nowhere to do jokes for you, you little privileged. For people who actually want to be here.
And by the way, normally I get a little upset with people who get mad that you're using your phone during a concert if you're trying to take photos or do some videos and whatnot. It's like, okay, they want to although we never actually relive the experience when we video. I've never, ever, ever rewatched video that I've taken at a concert. It is distracting when you're doing something live and it's based on words and memory and it's not muscle memory per se. So I'm kind of with him on this. The same thing with theater. Like at that point, it really is a distraction. It really does take you out. Concerts a little less so. So I'm sympathetic to him.
That's the problem. No, don't do that. It feels like half of you did it. That's what's about our generation. They're like, yeah. It's like, wait, you were the one filming, moron. That's why we're embarrassing. That's why the world is going to end in 25 years. Because you're
at least he's making it a bit.
That way, idiots. You should grow up, okay? It says no phones, says the thing on there. It's just like, you're just supposed to just like behave. I have to have my boy patrol you guys, like you're 5 years old.
Yes.
It's embarrassing. Should grow up. Where's the next generation? We're going, like, don't you want adults to respect us? Don't
no.
you want your parents to, like, be proud of you?
No.
You know how embarrassing it is to be our age and walk out and know everybody thinks you're a idiot? Grow
yes.
the up. No, I'll continue. No, I just don't want to scare you. Just grow up. Don't do that. Seriously.
So at some point, you end up losing the audience, including the people who maybe are on your side and getting in. Then you're like, okay, now let's move on. You don't have to keep berating us over and over and over again during the stand-up comic show that we paid money to see or we paid part of our student fees to do.
I can't believe you said Pete Davidson's likable.
I think he's likable. I like
him. The guy who makes fun of war injuries is likable?
He's a likable person. He apologized for that. I actually believe him in his apology. He's a guy who lost his dad on 9/11. He certainly understands the concerns of people who decided to get caught. What do you give me that look for?
Why? He has this self-righteousness, this undeserved self-righteousness.
Any entertainer, whether we're talking about stand-up comic or talk show host, we're all self-righteous.
Yes, I know you're self-righteous, and that's annoying too. But Pete Davidson acts like he's just above everyone. I'm above someone being on their phone. I'm above that. Put your phone down because I'm important.
It's part of the art. So let's say we're doing the show, and whether it's you or new producer Peyton, you're doing something else. Let's say you're on your phone playing a video game, which sometimes you do because you're an unprofessional goon. It's very distracting. And so instead of focusing on what it is we're there to do, in this case, doing a show, in his case, doing stand-up, trying to make the crowd laugh, which means you've got to get them in, you've got people who are being jerks. It takes you out of it. Now, part of it, I suppose, could come up to the idea of you just not being a good stand-up, Pete Davidson not having the crowd, then they get... Because he's not... I grant you that he's not a particularly funny comic to me. And at some point, you might lose the crowd. But then that's on you as the person who's not interested. Just leave. Step out. I get the whole idea of it being a distraction. I've emceed different events in which there is dinner being served at the time. And I'm there and I'm giving a speech and I'm making, points that I want to make, or I'm introducing a speaker who comes up after me. And it's very distracting when you've got folks who are eating their dessert and talking to each other and on their phones. And that's just on a low level. So I get where he's coming from. I just don't think he went about it the right way. You want to scold, you can scold, be funny for like 30 seconds. That clip there was 90 seconds almost, and he wasn't funny throughout any of it with some small exceptions.
If someone is distracted, they can put on their big boy or big girl pants and tell the person who's distracting them to put their phone away.
Like he just did?
The entertainer.
Like he just
did?
Who,
he berated them. He was the one that did that. He's the one getting paid. Sorry. Geez, life is so hard, Pete Davidson. Someone's on their phone while you're making...
Not making that much.
He's on SNL.
I mean, 20 grand. That's chump change to people like us, right?
Yeah.
1-800-465-8770. Send me your text on the Numbetter Tax Resolution Hotline. You are listening to The Jason Rand Show.